This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
The editor-in-chief of the very athletic Bay Area, Tim Kawakami.
Kawakami, who has covered the NBA for over two decades.
It's time now for the TK Show on the Athletic Podcast Network.
Hey everybody, Tim Kawakami here, TK Show, recording from the home studio as usual. Very, very glad to have on a friend of mine, NFL senior writer for The Athletic, somebody I always get on during the playoffs. We're a little bit later, but you know, hey, it helps because 49ers continue to win. And there are many interesting things that we can discuss. It's Mike Sando. Mike, how you doing today?
It's good to be back. Good to be here. I'm doing well. I love the playoffs.
It is very interesting. Obviously, the big stuff is 49ers at Eagles Sunday NFC Championship game. Mike, how do you view this? We saw the Eagles look fantastic. Jalen Hurts come back from it. That was the big question mark I had. But then they come back and they just blow out the Giants, looking fantastic. Yeah. 49ers didn't look tremendous beating the Cowboys, but you know, solidly done. Brock Purdy is a rookie quarterback who looks like he can get some things done. The defense looks good. How did just your initial impression know that's 49ers Eagles?
So the right teams are here. You know, sometimes you get a fluky thing along the way and suddenly you've got a matchup that just shouldn't be the matchup. These are the teams. These are the ones we really should see. The 49ers are the hottest team with the wins. Certainly one of the most intriguing teams with the quarterback no one expected to be there. You've got the Eagles, who I think were, you know, like you go in the AFC, Buffalo kind of was the best team a lot of the year, and in the end they weren't. I think Philly wavered a little bit late in the year, had some injuries that are still a little bit of a concern to me. Jalen Hurts is probably having a needle pushed into that shoulder, yep, you know, before the game, and that concerns me a little bit. But I just feel like these are the teams we want to see. You have to go beat the best to get there, and it's just how it should be. So I think that's great. You know, when the 49ers were down by a point at halftime to Seattle, you know, you're like, geez, I mean, if Seattle was in this game, mm-hmm, I mean, it's going to be a repeat of the Giants-Eagle game, right? It's going to be 38-7. Yeah. So I feel like this is great. And the 49ers, to me, are just the most intriguing team that's left because of all they've done to address the quarterback position. Yet here they are with Brock Purdy and all that means. It's just, it's a dream. It's a Tim Kawakami dream. I mean, come on. You couldn't script this any better for all the implications, right?
You know what I mean? Have I written about their quarterback situation a time or two for the last few years? Obviously, I read everything you write, Mike. And I can tell, you know, you're not a skeptic on Purdy, but you're certainly not like gushing saying this is the guy.
Yeah, no doubt.
And like nobody credible is saying this is the superstar, he's the next Brady. But I think some of us are just like, this guy's good. I think he's good. Yeah. Now, and it's healthy and wise to say, okay, we still need to see some stuff. But what is the kind of the context if you're saying, hey, no, listen, he's with the team, he's not leading.
Yeah, so I think we do get excited naturally. I have a little bit of a natural tendency probably to play a little bit of a contrarian when everyone gets so excited about something overwhelmingly. So
that's healthy. That's healthy.
Yeah, and I feel like there's no bigger you know, culprits of this than like the national broadcasts, you know. You put on the Bills game, and within 5 seconds, they got Leslie Frazier's face on there. And this has revolutionized defense in the league. This is the guy. And then, like, the first two drives are 80-yard touchdown drives or whatever against that defense, right? That's what happens on TV. Yep. And I think Brock Purdy, they put up the stats, and, you know, it's 50 more rushing yards per game since he came in. Do we think he's the key to them rushing for 50 more yards per game on an average basis? No. I mean, there's no possibility that's true. So he's done a great job in the perfect offense that you would want to have your backup quarterback go into. And I think he's been better than that at times, better than just the guy who's, you know, benefiting from everything around him, because he's made some really nice plays in the red zone and he's got half the battle of just not screwing it up, right? I mean, shoot, if Dak Prescott had not screwed it up maybe once, I don't think both interceptions were necessarily on him, but maybe Dallas wins the game, and he's a veteran quarterback who's played a lot and makes a ton of money. So you have to give Purdy his due. I just think the context could not be any better. And what I mean by that is, as I pointed out in my column, they've started, since he's been in there, 22 drives in plus territory. The next team has 13.
Yep.
So that is a huge advantage. You're immediately downhill. Then their defense is obviously completely dominant, except for a couple of games, you know, that were one-off odd games this year. Completely dominant. So that context changes everything for the quarterback, right? In terms of, you're not playing a bunch of games from behind. You're not in a lot of drop-back pass situations. There's really not that many exposures for him in really, really difficult situations. So, you know, among quarterbacks coming in, he's really born on third base.
Yeah, Christian McCaffrey, Debo Samuel also, and,
yeah,
you know, and George Kittle and all those other things.
Yeah, so it's not his fault, but I think it's really helpful context, and it's fair context, because when he does have the bad game or whatever, or has to be in that situation, then we shouldn't just all turn and say he's terrible or got exposed. It just sort of is what it is, and you have to look at that context. So I've probably been, you know, sometimes you struggle with that, like how much to be yeah-butting. But I think it is helpful, because this is not Kurt Warner coming in, even though he had a lot of great talent with the Rams, Hall of Famers all around him. But it's a seven-step drop pass game where they're throwing the ball outside the, you know, all over the field, and it's clearly the quarterback is driving a lot of it. I don't feel like that's what the 49ers are. So there's a context to that.
Yeah, I would. The only argument I would say, and then all that, I appreciate the stuff that you're writing and what you're saying, is that he fits perfectly with Kyle Shanahan. I think that's what, in the, you know, what we're saying, them having gone through everything they went through, changing from Jimmy Garoppolo, acquiring Trey Lance, sticking with Garoppolo, going back to Lance, going back to Jimmy after Lance got hurt. And then I think especially Lance in training camp, where they were trying to have him be the guy. They were just hoping he was the guy. And you know what? They were thinking Brock Purdy was the kind of might be the guy. Like I think that was the tension of training camp. And so then when Brock Purdy comes in after Lance gets hurt and Garoppolo gets hurt and it works like this, I think that's the reality. Like, this is what Kyle wants. The same, and I felt it like the RG3 Kirk Cousins things almost from the beginning, and I didn't see it in Purdy. I just saw the dynamic happening. Do you say this ends with a decent Purdy game? They lose in Philadelphia. Would you say, man, the 49ers got to bring in another quarterback? It can't be Brock Purdy, or would you say it's a competition? Would you say be on that?
I think he has to be beaten out. I mean, and you know, you sort of, I think the default question on all of that is, you can never fool the locker room, right? Mm-hmm. People know. So I think he's earned at this point. He's got way more, certainly, than anything Trey Lance has done. Yeah. There's no way. That would just feel wrong to go into next year and say, okay, we're back to our plan with Trey Lance. You know, unless he were to have, even if he were to have a terrible game against the Eagles, I don't know how you can do that. I think the question that I have is, okay, the reason you went for Trey Lance is because you thought there was a certain ceiling with Jimmy Garoppolo that was going to maybe make it so that you couldn't go all the way. Plus, his durability is an issue.
Yeah.
Now, what I don't know is the ceiling really higher with Purdy, other than hasn't been hurt yet? I almost feel like it's a similar type of player. You know, people I would think are going to see Brock Purdy as kind of that tier three. I mean, if he keeps doing it, he's upper tier three. Maybe if he really gets it going, he's the bottom of tier two. But it sort of, you sort of vacillate like Cousins does, right? You know, through that. So the irony to me would be that they found almost what they had.
Yeah. Now, where did you have Garoppolo? Like, where did Garoppolo max out on your tiers?
Okay, so Jimmy Garoppolo has been in the quarterback tiers survey for 5 years. And the survey, just to refresh, is me talking anonymously to 50 coaches and evaluators in the league and putting all of the veteran quarterbacks into tiers from tier one, which is, you know, what Rodgers or Mahomes have been. Burrow now, tier two is kind of, you know, the Pro Bowl guy, you know, maybe a Matt Ryan over the course of his career earlier. Certainly Lamar Jackson's in there, right? In any given year, they might be the MVP, but maybe consistently aren't in tier one. And then tier three is kind of your, you know, it used to be the Andy Dalton tier. It's the Kirk Cousins tier.
Derek Carr
could be in there, but I think at times people might have seen his talent as more, so they hoped he'd be a two. But so Jimmy has been tier three four times. Now, he did just nudge over the line into the bottom of tier two going into 2018 when he had 23 votes in tier two, 22 in tier three. So he just nudged over, but really solidly in tier three. I'll be interested, you know, I do a podcast every week with Randy Mueller, the Football GM podcast, and we had been texting back and forth, and he's been a pretty supporter. And the thing that he noticed throughout the season is they haven't changed the offense for Purdy, right? They haven't had to dumb it down or do less than Kyle wants to do.
I had somebody text me after the game, this last game, and say, you know, Purdy looks pretty good, but man, I think he's not going to be able to go into Philly and win that game. And that's a limitation. I go, yes, that's a limitation of almost everybody.
Of everybody. Yeah. There's no one going in there, you know.
Yeah, Mahomes, you know, maybe, but everyone else, like, this is a high bar. I understand you're on the biggest stage possible. This is quarterbacks and coaches get scrutinized by these games. I think it's unfair because you can get to these games, whatever. It's the way of life. It's the NFL. But, like, yeah, it's interesting that you had Garoppolo, like, nudging into two after 2017. That's when he went 5-0. As the fill-in, it's sort of familiar with the way that Purdy drops in, right? 5-0 as a starter defensive season. Yeah. Now 1-2 playoff games. I think he's right in there. And I think here's where I would say Garoppolo was, he's better than Garoppolo post Garoppolo ACL surgery. I think that changed kind of who Jimmy was.
Interesting.
Yeah. And where he was never a mover, but he could do it. He could run a little bit. That's running is what got his ACL blown out, right, in Kansas City early in the season in 2018. And after that, he never could do that kind of reset. Shuffle, shuffle, step, reset, boom. And that's what Purdy has.
You'll know this better than me because you've watched the 49ers more. But so let's go back to 2017. Did Jimmy show any of what I thought we saw later? He kind of sometimes had a little bit of meltdown moments over the years where he throws that pick or just sort of gets the pressure comes in and he makes that decision where you're like, ah,
yeah, happen in 17. 17 was just kind of this drop him in and he's just kind of cutting it loose.
Yeah.
And he's kind of like operating a little outside the Kyle system, by the way. He's kind of doing a little Patriot stuff. Yeah. He's kind of doing Eastern Illinois stuff. This is why I think the ACL thing did change it, because he did have the little move around, bounce, kick it out with a little, you know, snap to it. And after the ACL surgery and then certainly the ankle stuff happening in 2020, that kind of went away. And that's where he just kind of like lobbed it up off his back foot instead of two steps to the left, plant, and then zing. And Purdy, you know, obviously he could get hurt and this could happen to him too. I do think they're very worried that Trey Lance, having had all these injuries now, will never have the mobility and athleticism they hoped. They were disappointed in Lance's mobility this season. He just couldn't get to the outside, even when they called quarterback runs. This is why they were running him inside in the Seattle game, and he gets hurt running inside. And fans were mad about that. Like, they couldn't run him outside. He couldn't get past that linebacker on the edge. I have compared, now I'm not saying stylistically for sure. I don't think he's going to, you know, who knows about the career, but I'm compared Purdy a little bit to Russell Wilson, the 4-year starter in college. They had, you know, small stature. Russ is a bigger person, but short, and Purdy 6'1", maybe, and certainly, you know, much thinner. But I see some of that, like, you kind of discount him, 4-year starter, what's, you know, and kind of a character guy, and who knows. And then he gets to camp and the players go, whoa, like, this guy's got something. Obviously happened faster for Russ right away as a rookie, but Purdy's got, I think he's got some of that, that little extra to him. You can trash that comparison if you wish, or do you see anything to buy in on that one?
I think of Russell physically as being, I think Russell would just be a better athlete.
No question.
I mean, he's a baseball player. He's one of those guys with the big hands. You know, he's a littler guy, but he sort of had a bigger playing strength to him. I hadn't thought of that before. It's interesting to look at the first few games. I think the early context is similar in that, you know, these are defense run game teams who just need that guy to be efficient and then make some big plays a couple times, right? You have to be able to make some big plays. I think Russell was great at that. I haven't seen Purdy, you know, really move around with the magic. I think Russell had
that
magic.
Yeah, he can't bounce off of people. And I think that Russ could, like, bounce off of people. He could skip through a tackle a little bit.
He was so quick athletically. Yeah. I think he was really quick athletically. And that's what's gone from Russ now. You know, he doesn't have that quickness that he had. That's interesting. Yeah, I think jury's out. The comparison to Jimmy's great because of the short run over a short successful run. And then, okay, now people will actually start to game plan for you a little bit, right? Or they'll pick up some tendencies, or they'll say, you know what, I don't think he likes this. I think we're just getting to that. And that happens in the playoffs. So good for Brock Purdy because they made it through. I thought last week was going to be a Dan Quinn game. That's when I was asked about it before. I said, this is a Dan Quinn game. If I'm the Cowboys, I'm saying, Dan Quinn, you've evolved how you call games. You don't do the same old defenses. What do you have for Brock Purdy? Can you get him once? Can you get him just on the one play that can turn the game? And they played good defensively, but they didn't get him. They didn't get the one thing that could have blown the game. Can Philly? I don't know. You know, but I'm not going to overreact. If he has a bad game against Philly, I'm not told you so mode. I promise you that I'm not going to do that, even though I've kind of been the one saying, oh, you know, let's not get too excited. You know, I think all that context, and now you go against a really good team, of course it might look hard, right?
On the road, yeah. I mean, yeah. I think this is going to be a really tough game for the 49ers. I do. Haven't picked it yet, but I think I'm going to take the Eagles. And again, you don't want to overvalue one game. You know, Dallas looks great destroying Tampa Bay, and that's not who they were. You know, you don't want to overvalue that Eagles performance against Giants, but the Eagles performed it all season long when Hurts was healthy. They've just got so many ways to attack you. I think they are the most talented team in the league. Would you lean Eagle? I mean, just forget. I mean, it's home field, all those things. Yeah. I'm leaning Eagles. Would you agree with that at this point?
I'm leaning Eagles. You know, my fear for them has been Jalen Hurts' injury, and I just think of how fast and physical the linebackers are of the 49ers. So I see the worst-case scenario to me for Eagles is they run Hurts on some of those things, and he just gets smashed. And that's been a problem for all those guys who run like that. You know, I mean, you start going inside, and then Warner's coming across and smashing you. Now, I did go back and forth texting this morning with a coach who has studied both teams. I said, hey, what's your feel? And he said Eagles, and I said, why? And he said, I think they're better in the trenches on both sides of the ball, and that will play itself out over the course of the game. So, you know, maybe that'll be the case. Maybe not.
70 sacks, Sando, man. That is unbelievable. 70 sacks in a season. That's like, that shows me something, that they're going to get consistent pressure on Purdy in a way. And he got pressure by the Cowboys, who are a good pass rushing team, but they're not 70 sacks. So the ball's going to go up in some awkward positions, I think, and that might lead. And he's avoided turnovers. He's been incredible about that. But I think the ball's going to go up in some weird things, and that's going to create one or two turnovers that 49ers cannot afford against the Eagles. That would be my guess.
Yep. I think it's going to be a great game. I just love the I love to watch. I think the 49ers are so compelling just for all of these reasons. And Kyle Shanahan's so good. Mm-hmm. If they could win the Super Bowl, like if I could have, like, not from a fan standpoint, but just from a compelling content standpoint, the 49ers winning the Super Bowl this year, I can't think of anything better of the four teams that are left. Mm-hmm. I can't think of anything that would be more fun because it would turn everything on its head.
You
win the Super Bowl with Brock Purdy. Like, the whole league's about the importance of the quarterback and all of that. And look, you can win it with, you know, poor Trent Dilfer always gets brought up, but it was just an extreme situation of their defense being so good. You can do it. I just think for all they've gone through at the position and so much focus on it, if they were to win it with him, not even because of him, just with him, it would just be amazing. And especially with this many good teams left, these are the teams, right?
And great quarterbacks.
Right? Yes. Yes, these are the teams.
You're not going through the piddly ones. What's Kyle Shanahan's kind of place? If you had to do a tier, I know you don't, I'm throwing this at you, but would Kyle Shanahan be a tier one coach?
I think you'd have to at this point. I really do. I think there's different ways to evaluate coaches, and they bring value on game day in different ways. If I were to just say, ideally, what would I want as a coach? It might be more in the global coach who isn't calling the plays and sets the culture for the team. And you might think of a Mike Tomlin or a John Harbaugh, Pete Carroll to some degree, you know, those types of coaches. I sort of like that, but not everybody's like that. Kyle brings the incredible value to what he does on offense. And I think he probably is underrated in the other components and just leading the team and all of that. I think he's really good in that area too. But I don't know how – he's a little different among the play-calling coaches in that he does – I believe he does both the run game and the pass game.
Yeah,
that's sort of a little subtle wrinkle. Most of these guys just want to call the pass plays. They have someone else do the runs. Like, he does the whole offense. I think that's impressive. Look at Sean McVay, kind of does too. But, man, it's been hard for him, and he's wavered, and does he want to do this? And I get it. Not Kyle. Like, he's been in the middle of a bunch of this stuff with some they've had terrible injury year. They've lost.
Oh, yeah, several of them.
Kyle Shanahan wavering. He's putting another dip in his lower lip and going to work. And I just admire what he does.
Here's what's really good about having your coach call the plays. You never lose a single caller. You don't. Yeah. Like, you just don't have, oh, my God, what are you – like, defensive coordinator, you do. But they always seem to have a pretty good selection of defensive coordinators. We'll see if and when DeMeco goes. But I think Fangio is pretty well set up if he doesn't have to take another job before the 49ers can offer it to him. But, like, you just don't have that. You don't run around, oh, my God, we got to go hire an offensive coordinator. Like, you know, Buffalo, you know, like you lose Daboll, and what do you – you know, Dorsey, okay, but is he that good? And what if you lose Dorsey? And then, you know, you just never have that when your offensive – coordinator is your head coach. And that was the Al Davis thing, right? That was the Al thing. Like, I want my head coach to run the offense. And now I was going to kind of run the defense. And that's one thing about Al I always agree with. You want an offensive coordinator, head coach. You never lose that. The quarterback never loses this, you know, loses the context of the scheme. And you need the defensive players to respect the guy. Like, that's really important. And an offensive-minded guy sometimes doesn't have the respect of the defensive guys, but some of the top guys, have the absolute respect of both sides, and that's what I feel from Kyle, and it's not easy to get. You know, you don't always have that. What's Sirianni like, by the way? Is he calling the plays?
No. Shane Steichen does, and I think that's really interesting because Sirianni is an offensive coach, but I think deliberately did that, and I think he's been impressive. Now, I think Shane Steichen's been really good too. They did a really nice job because in their first year with Jalen Hurts as a starter, the first six games of the season, they were one of the most pass-heavy teams. They were sort of running their system, right? What they wanted to do. And, you know, I always measure that on the Russell Wilson Cook Index, you know, how frequently are you passing on early downs early in the games? And they were like near the top. They said, let's not do this. Jalen Hurts, they switched and became like the most run-heavy team the rest of the way and really got they made the playoffs. Now, this year, I think they've balanced it back out, and Jalen Hurts has probably grown and developed as a pocket passer to some degree. I like Shane Steichen's been with Phillip Rivers. He's been with, he's been with Jalen Hurts, two totally different types of guys, and I think had some good success. We had a neat story the other day about what influence Norv Turner's had on him. I kind of like the setup. I like the fact that the head coach, in this case, is fine having someone else do it. That's unusual. So the thing about these two teams, though, is their personnel is really good, and the defenses are good. So when you talk about having offensive play callers, when that defense is really good, it allows you to play the game kind of a certain way that is favorable to the quarterback. So I think the ultimate test for any coach, especially an offensive coach, and a quarterback, is what happens if and when the defense falls off. Philly's done such a great job of keeping the urgency around their roster even after they won the Super Bowl. So they won the Super Bowl. Shoot, they're firing guys. They're loading up. They're getting A.J. Brown. Their defense, they've done a really good job, been proactive on. I think the 49ers have been that way too. They get Christian McCaffrey, but that defense is good.
Yep.
So I'm kind of anxious to see longer term for these teams, usually what happens is you pay a quarterback and the defense falls off, right?
Yep.
The 49ers haven't really lived in that world yet.
And now they could, starting quarterback would be making $800,000 next season.
Maybe they will never have to. That'll be the ultimate amazing thing. What if they're just able to have a top five defense forever?
Yep.
Like they'll become the Ravens.
Yep, you know, it's looking like that. They're young on defense. Bosa is going to be, you know, I assume they're going to extend them for $30 million, whatever it's going to cost a year.
They better, right?
Yeah, I mean, if you have Nick Bosa, you're going to have a pretty good defense.
And then he wins games in the fourth quarter. He puts the tackle into the quarterback and it affects the game. It's unbelievable.
Yep. The ball comes out and then they win the game. We could talk about this forever. I'm sure people would listen to it forever, but I don't want to take too much of your time, Santa. We can just talk about this on and on. I'm sure we will. Some of it will be recorded, some of it won't be, but always great to have you on. I'll finish this with a version of a question I ask everybody, Mike Sando, and I'm going to be interested in this one. What's your favorite restaurant right now?
Okay, so right now I live in the Seattle-Tacoma area, South Sound, right? And we've got this great Mexican steakhouse called Cuerno Bravo. And it's funny, you know, this isn't the restaurant mecca, right, of anywhere. But my good friend Robert Mays, who does the Athletic Football Show podcast, was sending me a gift certificate without me knowing. And so he did his own research and he happened to get me one there. And so my wife and I not only went there for anniversary, but went there recently. And I just love it. You know, they bring it out. They bring out your steak on a really hot plate, and then you can leave it on there as long as you want to finish how done you want it, right? So it kind of comes out a medium rare, a little rare, and I just love it. The flavor, we had those gift certificates. I did like a flight of the Japanese A5, the Australian Wagyu, and then whatever, the Angus. It was unbelievable. Just like a really nice treat, so... That's what I got.
Can you say the name of it again? What's the name of it?
Cuerno Bravo. Cuerno Bravo. So if you're ever not really in Seattle, but maybe you're making that trek from Portland to Seattle and you kind of get in the Tacoma area, that's one that we've really liked. And the prices are really good for that type of, you know, a higher end fare. Like it's not, you don't have to spend $75 for a steak. You know, you can get something there. More reasonable. And
last time I got a steak was the dinner with Ray Rattle in San Francisco, and it was $180 a piece. So that was a little
yeah, much. No, yeah, this isn't, you can do that. Like, you know, when I did that, I had the gift certificate, so I did that flight of the three. That was like $150, but you would spend way more than that at another place for that. You can get one for $40, you know, and I don't do steaks that often anymore, but that's the place I go if I'm going to do one locally.
I like it. I like it. I like to hear about these things I have not heard of, and we'll see if I can get out there and try it. And credit to Robert Mays for doing the research.
He did.
That's good reporting. All right. Thanks so much, Mike. Really appreciate you talking to me.
Hey, thank you.
Show for today, everybody.